Well, welcome back to another episode of Convict Nerds and Celibacy. As always, you're here with your fabulous host, Nicholas Patterson.
And your other host, Umed Abdullah. And we have got a special treat for you.
Special Ed.
Special Ed. Wear your helmets because James
Wear your helmets and like bright orange vests.
And water
Whatever.
Wings.
A construction retard.
You could be a construction.
He's working on it. Too far?
Never too far.
Okay. Introduce yourself, guest.
My name is James Evans.
But we will be calling you guest.
Oh, I'll just be guest. My friends call me guest, actually. Okay.
You're very, intruder. You hang out with very intruder.
Very formal people.
Amber Alert.
They call me Amber Alert.
So why don't we start with your comic book knowledge?
Yeah, mine, as always, is extremely extensive.
And modest.
I try to be. The words Mr. Expert has been thrown around.
By me, mostly.
Yeah.
Mr. Expert.
This is actually Matt Bernard in the first episode.
Oh, yeah, Mr. Expert.
And I've never forgot that.
My
he didn't say it mockingly, though.
No, never. Never mind. My comic book knowledge, it extends to what Nick has shown me and gotten me into, and it started with movies and video games, and now I started reading comics because they're interesting.
My comic book experience goes back a little while. I've been a big fan of most qualities of nerd culture. I like comic books, video games, television shows, science fiction, fantasy.
Porn?
Absolutely.
Me too.
There you go.
Did you ever watch the Batman XXX?
No, I haven't.
No, but I've always wanted to click the link. I've just never wanted to see what it would do to my childhood.
Well, does Robin?
I mean, I've never seen it. Funny story, Batman and Robin have a part where they double penetrate Batgirl.
Oh, she deserves it, I bet.
But she takes off her mask, which I think is silly.
No. Wait, is this post Killing Joke, Batgirl, where she's in the wheelchair, or did
No, they didn't go that far. No.
Quitters. Yeah.
But it's so funny because she takes off her mask and breaks character, but Batman and Robin both stay in character, they're parodying like the Adam West Batman and Robin. It's so funny.
Are there really funny onomatopoeias? Like, yeah, wham, I was gonna splash.
Holy sperm in a vagina, Batman.
Yeah.
Teaching kids as they go.
Yeah. That's how you got to do it.
Yeah.
So for this episode, why don't we start off by talking, we've been talking a lot about fan art and things you would change if you could make your own comic book. Because I was talking to James before this started, and we had a really good conversation about fanboys who complain too much when they don't like what's going on or like what direction someone takes it in.
Yeah. I think it's interesting that these characters have been around for a long time, and a lot of times people are introduced to them when they're kids, and it can be a little jarring to, you know, when you realize that these aren't just parts of your imagination. They're corporate properties that you might not have any control over. So a lot of fanboys, you know, they have these big, you know, writing campaigns and everything, and they get mad at what publishers are doing with their characters. So I think the solution is to write your own or try to get a job in comics yourself.
That was so interesting that you said that to me, and it really stuck with me that, like, instead of just complaining about what you don't like, write your own. Yeah, they'll never, you know, be produced. Like, chances are they won't be produced or made or anything, but it doesn't matter. I mean, it's about the story that you want to tell.
Well, I think that the story is often what gets left behind in mainstream superhero comics, that you've got a status quo you need to preserve, and a lot of times that shortchanges the reader because you don't get to see, like, a real narrative arc in the work that gets, you know, put out month by month.
Definitely.
So that's what actually turns a lot of people off of books after a while, I think.
Oh, completely, definitely.
Completely,
definitely.
Completely, definitely.
Averagely, definitely.
Oh, if I could say something. Most recently, I don't know if you've heard about this, DC Comics is completely rebooting their mainstream continuity.
That is
They're
so
dropping
cool.
every one of their stories back to issue one and changing the,
so
the world around. Yeah, so I'm a little skeptical about some of the choices they're making. But,
well, I think that's great because people like me who have gotten into comics 50 years too late now have the chance to start over and, you know, and
50 years. I missed the boat.
He had the option.
Because I love, like, now that I'm reading origin stories, I'm so in love with, like, where these characters start and now to see them all over again.
By the way, do you guys hear my really, really good tweet I did about DC Reborn?
Go ahead.
Right after, who is it? Who's the girl that just died?
Amy Winehouse.
After Amy Winehouse died, I'm like, did you hear that DC just, while they're doing all their Reborn series, they decided to do an Amy Winehouse Reborn, but this time she's successful?
Ooh.
Low blow.
It's not too soon. I don't think it's too soon.
She was pretty successful right up until the end there. She got herself a Grammy. That's good.
No,
that's worth something.
Feel for her.
The only thing I actually...
Five Grammy Awards, actually.
Did she?
Really? Five. Yeah. There you go. How many Grammy Awards do you have, Nick?
Seven.
Oh, okay.
Two more than that.
I hate my words.
The only actual Amy Winehouse, anything I know about her is in Bo Burnham in one of his songs says, yeah, what is it? You're doing lines on your table like Amy Winehouse.
Oh, yeah. I can't remember the actual... I forgot about
that's
that.
That's the only time I've ever heard Amy Winehouse.
I had never heard about anything about her until she
Me
died.
Neither.
I knew who she was.
That's
she
exactly
was, like,
why
crazy.
She's
a big
she
celebrity.
Be,
deaths, yeah. Or go ahead. It's just like, you know, big celebrity deaths are sort of, you know, it's kind of an interesting thing that we've got this sort of like obsession with celebrity. I mean, like, you know, talking about comic books, yeah. Heath Ledger thing, you know, that was such a huge part of how audiences responded to The Dark Knight when it came out. Mm-hmm. And so it's, just, it's interesting.
Yeah. Well, okay, so let's go back to the fanner. I guess, can I start? Because mine's short and I don't know much. So I know you guys are going to like blow up.
Go ahead.
Okay, it's a story where Superman isn't.
Superman.
Yeah,
I'm not. Was it, hold on. The Simpsons thing, Alan Moore's run on Radioactive Man, where he's a heroin addicted jazz critic who's in no way radioactive.
Oh,
that's
take.
And Bart, he's like, Bart's like, you're my favorite. And he's like, you like the idea this is your favorite character? He's like, I just like the pictures.
I like it when he punches people. How do you make his clothes fit so tight to his muscles? I'm sorry, go ahead, Uma.
Okay, so there's been, I was reading Merce Without a Mouth. Mercenary with a Mouth with Deadpool.
Which is Deadpool, yeah.
And he talks about how his head is a zombie head and comes from the alternate universe where, like, the Marvel world is rampant with this zombie disease. I think the coolest thing would be if they had this story where a virus outbreak comes out and everyone is turned into a virus except for anyone with regenerative qualities. So we're talking Deadpool, Wolverine, any villains as well, like you were saying.
Even Hulk. Yeah, Hulk's got regenerative powers.
And that would be so great. But as Bruce Banner, I think if he's infected, he should be infected. And then when he turns to the Hulk and gets angry as a zombie, well, he's going to be always angry, right? Because he's a zombie. But so he's always a Hulk.
What are you saying that zombies have anger problems?
Well,
28 days later, and stuff, yeah, and they're like,
everything gets him mad. I think so. What would be cool is now they're
the villains. Would suck if he was just Bruce Banner all the time, also, just being like, my girlfriend doesn't like me. Yeah. My girlfriend's dad is mean.
His girlfriend dates Prince in the Ultimate Series. I think it's a.
Oh, no, it's Freddie Prinze Jr.
Yeah. Also not the artist formerly known as. But
the artist formerly known as Freddie Prinze Jr.
Yeah. So I think that – so all the villains and superheroes come together. And because they have this, like, power to heal, they can't get bitten. So it's up to them to find a way. And I think the way they should solve it is that eventually – so they're trying to find the scientists who started this strand of DNA or whatever. And then they end up realizing that because they can heal, they should just distribute their own blood in some sort of vaccine – and save the world.
So pretty much like Dr. Zaius in Planet of the Apes.
Exactly.
It's Planet of the Apes,
Dr.
Zaius. Only Planet of the Zombie.
Marvel zombie superheroes. Let's and
do it. Don't step on my dream, both of you.
Oh, right. It's so small. I don't know how we have to kick your shoes.
You even start off by saying, I'm going to go first because mine is the smallest.
Xbox. Like nothing to say. Okay, which one do you want to go next?
I don't know.
I don't know. You go.
Oh,
I will go. Mine is I've been working on an idea for a while and completely revamping the Spider-Man series completely. And in this version, it's Spider-Man's parents were – so it's Norman Osborn has this big company, you know. And the reason why Spider-Man and Eddie Brock's parents die, or Peter Parker's, is because he was originally testing the Vulture flight suit. And the Vulture is just – unnamed henchman, you know, who wears this flight suit and accidentally goes haywire and he crashes into the parents' plane. So Eddie Brock is a little bit older than Peter Parker. So, you know, both his parents die. He doesn't have anyone to take him in. So he goes to an orphanage, kind of has this darker upbringing. But Peter Parker in this version doesn't get bitten by a spider. Harry Osborn does. So Norman Osborn, seeing that Harry Osborn got bit by it, does all extensive tests on him, actually killing him because he wants to get, you know, this power out of
his
him.
Own
so,
son?
So all the villains in the Spider-Man series are all, they all got their powers from experiments Norman Osborn did from the spider bite.
Oh,
and Spider-Man in this version, because I feel like Spider-Man still, in a sense, dons a suit, but my Spider-Man suit is going to be like a red hoodie that goes over his head with blue jeans, doesn't have any powers or anything, but still has the web cartridge devices because I wanted originally it to be his father had invented that, like, you know, the liquid from it. So in this version, you know, Eddie Brock comes back. Eddie Brock actually gets infected by one of the experiments, giving him the Venom superpowers. And I want the series to end with Spider-Man. Eddie Brock goes to go kill Vulture because, you know, he blames his father's death for it. Spider-Man accidentally gets, or Peter Parker, sorry, gets killed in the meantime. And Eddie Brock ends up realizing that, you know, with great power comes great responsibility, and he ends up becoming Spider-Man because he actually has the powers.
Oh, cool. So Peter Parker doesn't have powers, wants to be hero, but dies.
Because through the whole thing, people will think that, you know, Peter Parker, he already has, for the most part, the outfit. This is the Peter Parker we know he's going to be coming. I don't think anyone will see Eddie Brock coming, except for them listening to this. Oh,
we're just going to have to find those people and kill them, and then that'll
be fine. If anyone steals this idea, I'm talking to you, Marvel.
It's one guy.
Yeah.
It's just like Mark Vale, and his friends call him Marvel, and he just steals ideas for a living.
I really like that that Harry Osborn dies and his father kills him trying to test him. And does he feel bad about it, Norman Osborn?
I don't think he should feel any sympathy.
Because he wants
he's a very big business. He sees how much power comes from this and sees that his son isn't strong enough to wield it.
Okay. So now, then he feels the right to test on
him. What would be interesting is, Marvel has a line of comics called What If, where they take they deviate from the mainstream continuity at different points in history and see what would happen. What you could actually do is if you got any kind of gig at Marvel and you worked your way out, what you do is you pitch this idea as like it deviates at the point where it's like, what if Harry Osborn had been bitten by the spider instead of Peter Parker? Would Peter Parker still pursue the path of Spider-Man even if he didn't have his powers? You could really like work it in such a way that like you could tell that story in Marvel Comics. Like there's probably room for it,
One of my favorite, because I wanted to do it very almost what Ultimate Comics did to it, where they made it a lot more modern, all the powers and everything, and like I wanted to have Mysterio in it is a kid who works, he's a special effect artist, but because I wanted to keep when Spider-Man's in high school and he's a special effects kid for like the theater productions in it. And I wanted Mysterio to be, as a series going along, there's this play that everyone's auditioning for called Mysterio, and that's what the costume is. So he ends up wanting, because he's been bullied, he wants to get revenge on the people who bullied him, so he dons the Mysterio costume and sets up all these extensive special effects to try and get back on them. So like all the villains in it, like there will be, the bigger villains, but for the most part, all the villains are almost just like kids that Peter Parker sees in his high school that, they're not super villains, but they all don the costumes and they're the same kind of characters, which is very...
Man, mine was crap. I was just like, I want...
Yeah, well,
I
maybe a Sven...
You guys are both special in their own way. It's all right.
I liked yours, Umed.
It's okay.
All right, James, what was yours?
I don't know. I'm kind of artsy-fartsy with my take on a lot of stuff.
Smells in here.
Yeah, smells like art fart up in this club. So my take on it was sort of like, I don't really have the patience for continuity stuff that I find too often. You've got stories that like cross from title to title and everything. So I think it would be great for, again, readers like Umed, who are kind of new to comics and everything, or even people who've been reading them for a while, to have a really kind of like mythic take on these characters where you have your own, you find as a creator, like what are the parts of these stories and the parts of these characters that resonate most with you and compile them into like one huge epic story, like a 20 issue run or whatever that covers like, my plan was supposed to take like the DC characters. Mm-hmm. I'd do a story that would start with Kal-El's arrival on Earth in the present day and would finish when the Justice League is having their big brawl with Doomsday, which, as we know in the mainstream continuity is what kills off Superman in the 80s. Well, instead of him coming back, that would really be the end of Superman. Yeah. So in that time frame, you actually follow these superheroes' whole lives from when they're like little, kids growing up in this world that's changed by superpowers, growing up, becoming like the heroes of the world and everything like that and being challenged. But you'd have an opportunity to make it sort of contemporary and emotional and put some literary stuff in there that, would bear reading. Because I think like a lot of superhero comics that are, they try to compensate for the fact that the stories aren't terribly sophisticated with like adding a lot of violence and stuff like that. That in my opinion, sort of like draws back from it. So I'd like to sort of return to the way I felt as a kid reading superhero comics from the 40s, 50s, 60s, 70s.
So example of one of these characters and what they would go through as their arc.
Well, in terms of like, if you're starting when characters are little kids, I mean, there've been a lot of stories about Superboy when he was a kid, but you don't really get a chance to see Bruce Wayne growing up very often. Or when they do it, they don't really do it very well.
Yeah, I've always wondered about that, actually.
So I wanted to make that a point of focus. Both Superboy's like one part of the story, young Bruce Wayne and a young Wonder Woman. And like for Batman, he doesn't decide to be Batman for a long time. And when he's a kid, he's looking for kind of a father figure while he's building up his skills. And I was thinking about bringing in Hugo Strange right at the beginning after he's lost his parents and he's a child psychologist. And I'm thinking Dr. Hugo Strange would come in and he actually sort of plants the idea in his head to go on this path because, as we all know, Hugo Strange isn't a very good guy. He's looking to manipulate this kid into... Mm-hmm. something bad because he's obsessed with this Batman idea. So the idea that he sort of is this cutting edge Freud type guy who is applying these kind of radical therapeutic techniques on young Bruce Wayne and involuntarily turns him into the Dark Knight.
Oh, cool.
So that's one example of just sort of, I'm not changing too many things. Like I don't really feel like with Batman, Wonder Woman or Superboy that I have to deviate too much from the beats of the plot, because I think the plots are sort of spelled out for me at this point. But for me, it's more about perspective that I actually want to focus on. In my opinion, these characters still need to be heroes. Like I want them to be good, you know. And that's my take on it.
We talked a lot about today about like how the only difference, you were saying the only difference between heroes and villains is that heroes have the compassion that villains lack.
Well, yeah, I think that we in real life, we project a lot this sort of hero-villain mentality. I'm being all like, right now. But, you know, this idea that, you know, a lot
deep
of times...
Deep brooding, yeah.
Yeah, well, a lot of times you need in order to justify action, you need someone to be wrong. You need someone to blame. And that's what a villain offers, is you've got somebody who... Every problem in the story is a result of this one person. If we kill them or beat them up, that goes away. And I think the world's a little more complicated than that. And I think that superheroes, being so smart and capable, would understand that, and that should be part of the story.
Interesting.
That's so cool. So would you have in this, in your DC one, would you have the characters, so you're saying the main are pretty much Superboy, Batman, and Wonder Woman.
Yeah.
Would they kind of know each other growing up, or would it be at the point when they get to superheroes, then they, because like that's what, I don't know if you follow Smallville or followed.
Yeah, yeah, I watched Smallville for a long time.
Exactly.
It fell apart, but it was a good show for a while.
Yeah, oh, definitely. And the thing I loved about Smallville is, you know, before Superboy, Superman, he's already, you know, met Flash, who calls himself something else.
He's like Bart Allen, I think, was the name they gave to the guys.
And you know, he sees him, you see Aquaman, you meet Cyborg, Green Arrow. He knows all these characters growing up, and I loved it because even before, you know, he starts off as Clark Kent, goes into the red blue blur, then it's just the blur, and then finally Superman. Mm-hmm. But like, you know, really early in one of the seasons, he meets the Flash. Flash isn't the Flash, he isn't him, but they both obviously know each other.
And the audience has that little giddy moment where you're like, oh, they're going to be Superman and the Flash. Yeah,
yeah, exactly.
And that's obviously like a big thing that allures me about this idea when I first, you know, started thinking about it, was this idea that you could tell it from before they know who they're going to be until they've sort of gone further than we've seen them in the comics already. Like, I wanted to take the ideas further, but like when they're kids, like at the very beginning when it's like Bruce Wayne, Clark Kent, and Princess, you know, like, you know, Diana, the Amazons, you got this idea where like they don't necessarily know each other right away. They each sort of represent a different perspective. Like, you've got Bruce Wayne is sort of in high society of human beings. Clark Kent lives in Kansas.
Grew up on a farm.
He's a space alien. He's got all that science fiction, you know, qualities to his story. And Wonder Woman represents all the magic in the DC universe. And their paths cross in ways they don't see at first. But the reader can piece the pieces together, see how each story affects
each
other.
That, when you're watching Smallville, you're like, you know, he becomes Superman, and you're watching to see what effect every little incident has
and
to make him.
And it's interesting to the one of the ideas that I had is that, you know, it opens in contemporary times with real cities, New York, London, all that. But Metropolis and Gotham are built over the course of the story.
That's cool.
That it's actually Bruce Wayne's parents that propose the Metropolis Project, which is the name of the book that I want to write. And the idea is that they actually propose the construction of like a global capital, which is going to be Metropolis. Mm. And when they die, the future of the city is in jeopardy. So it's actually that right off the bat, stories are affecting other stories. Like Bruce Wayne's story is affecting what will eventually be Superman's story.
Superman's
story.
Oh, that's really cool.
And it works like that all over the place.
Yeah, and it'll intertwine that.
Well, like, I know for mine, I didn't want to bring in... I wanted to keep it generally specific to the Spider-Man universe. I didn't want to bring in that much of Marvel, but I wanted to do small little bits. Like, I wanted to have that... I wanted to have Peter Parker as a bright kid. And originally... when he goes to the factory where Harry Osborn gets bit, I want it to be that they're going to a science, almost like a convention, sort of. And one of the speakers on it is Tony Stark's father. So you see Tony Stark there, but he's still a kid. And then later on in the story, you just kind of hear news coverage of his father being killed. And I want to have for that, it's almost, you know, like Tony Stark, I want to see the reason why he becomes it is because his father gets killed when he's that age, and then he decides he has to step up.
I don't know his origin story. Does that happen? Tony Stark's dad dies, and like, because I don't know
his dad dies.
They give him some daddy issues in the comics.
Yeah,
they have this idea that.
But they didn't bring it up in the movies, and they haven't brought it up recently, and that's why. And I didn't want to focus on that at all, but I thought, you know, it'd be cool to kind of, in the background of this Spider-Man story, you kind of, exactly like that, you see the Marvel Universe being rewritten form like that, and, you know, have like little hints about, you know, and I want to do little hints and not show the Hulk at all, but little hints about places really far away, and you see news coverages of like monster attacking. So you think it's the Hulk, but it's never, you know, the Hulk doesn't have the name yet or anything like that, but... You know, you just, like, little
the
characters.
The reader can piece it together better
than
the
characters
can, right?
Exactly, and just things, because I think that's so interesting, and, you know, if you can do it, like, why not?
Yeah, it's, again, one of those things, when we're talking about, you know, fantasies that every reader has when they pick up a comic book, you know, oh, if I wrote it, it would be...
Yeah, exactly.
So, you know, and for me, it's this thing where as I get older... you know, I think this happens to a lot of people. When you first read them when you're younger, you've got this sort of immediate, like, wonder, appreciation, and then when you start seeing, like, you know, the real world... there starts to be this divide between how things worked out in the story and how you see, you know, like what you see in the news and everything like that creeps into it. And it's interesting how, you know, we see with the Ultimate Marvel Universe you were talking about a little while ago, how within the industry, in this reboot with DC, they're rewriting the rules of the universe to sort of jive with contemporary realities and how the world's become more complicated. And I think that there might be, you know, with What If and Elseworlds in DC, there is this opportunity now for new writers to come in and change.
Are all the writers down to do this remake? Were there any objections from people saying, like, why give up all the past? And
oh, yeah. No, there was a lot of objections. Just because you've got 70 years of... This isn't the first time that DC's rebooted.
I didn't know
The DC characters were mostly created in the 40s, and in the 1980s, a bunch of guys did something called Crisis on Infinite Earths, where they brought everything back to zero. So what you know is the DC continuity is really only dates back to the 1980s.
Cool.
But there's been a lot of, like, there are many universes with many heroes and many possibilities, and they jump from universe to universe and stuff. But yeah, so they're starting again with this idea, like, Superman just showed up in Metropolis. He's not married to Lois Lane anymore. Little stuff like that. But,
okay.
It's there to bring in new readers, but it is frustrating a lot of old ones.
When are they doing this? Like, have they already started?
Oh, it's starting over the next couple months.
Oh, that's so in. I can't wait. So they're still producing comics now?
I think they just had Comic-Con in San Diego. Yeah. I was on
it's still going on right now.
I was doing a film, and one of the guys who was the cameraman he was the editor, told me that he was actually flying out the next day, which I thought was cool. And, because I follow Marvel on Twitter, and, you know, every couple of hours they say, like, you know, Marvel Reborn for...
Marvel's doing it as well.
Oh, no, yeah, Marvel's doing it as well. No, Marvel's not doing Crisis on... They're doing the Marvel Reborn series.
Well, Marvel isn't doing a reboot, though. They're not rebooting it's interesting. Marvel's actually, since it's been around for a shorter time, Marvel Comics really came to be in the 60s. Yeah. They had some, like, Captain America in the 40s and stuff, but they really came back with Stan the Man Lee and all that in the 60s. But they've basically kept with it since Spider-Man's origins. And,
So they
haven't had to reboot yet. And I wonder if, depending on how
They're doing it now, because DC's doing it.
Really? Well, they've got the Ultimates. That was the point of the Ultimate Universe, is they had a separate universe that was starting from scratch.
But Ultimates is done now.
Oh, actually, with Ultimatum, which was terrible.
Oh, you didn't like Ultimatum?
I hated Ultimatum.
Man, but they made some choices in Ultimatum.
Yeah,
they're
pretty bold.
They made bold choices. But do you know why they could? Because the series was ended. They could do whatever they want.
It sold really well, and they're actually continuing it. But this is an interesting
thing. I haven't
read
the new Ultimate Spider-Man.
Spider-Man's dying. Spider-Man's going to die. He's going to be gone, and it looks like this is going to be a little more permanent than, like, when they killed Superman.
Yeah.
Because Spider-Man's going to die, and the idea is he's going to be Uncle Ben to some other people. Like, he's going to pass it on, and some other kid's going to become Spider-Man.
Yeah.
And hopefully it won't suck. But
they've never done
that.
Like, and I feel like Spider-Man's one of the only, well, other than, you know, Clark Kent, but Spider-Man's one of the only people that it hasn't passed on. Like, think about Green Lantern. There's the Robins. Like, there's a lot of people that actually, you know, the character itself stays, but the person who dons the costume moves
Wolverine
on.
Wolverine hasn't died.
He dies in the Ultimates one and stuff.
But how does he die? With all his
Magneto tears the adamantium off of his bones. And
makes it so small that, he can't.
There's an entire plot line. It's been a running joke in superhero comic books about this idea that you'd kill a character to boost sales because people would be like, oh, Superman's dying, I gotta read it and watch what happens. And then it sells so well that they're like, well, we can't afford to have Superman gone now because he's our best-selling book, so we gotta bring him back.
Yeah.
There was Jeff Johns, whom he did the Blackest Night series, and the whole idea was all of the DC characters that have been brought back from the dead were being left as sleeper agents by death as a way of, like, you know, he would have undead superheroes all around the world who died and come back, and now he could use them as puppets to take over the world.
Cool.
So it's funny the way that the sort of ridiculous things that the industry characters do have been.
Well, they've been doing it for so long that you're at a point and they're like, what do we do next?
Well, because they can't really tell stories a lot of the time, you know, that you can riff on it. But a lot of times it takes an Alan Moore or there's a guy, Nick Spencer. He's a new guy to watch. He's a new writing talent that you should look for. He's working for Marvel because DC let him go. But there, every now and again, you get these really talented writers that think of something really interesting to do to kind of revitalize it or bring it into the new decade. But yeah, I think it's interesting.
Cool.
Yeah.
So what does he do? Like his Nick Spencer's?
Well, Nick Spencer actually, he got shafted. When he was working for DC, no one would give him anything interesting to write. They ended up giving him Jimmy Olsen, which is like an 8-page comic at the back of Action Comics, which nobody was reading.
Yeah.
You know, because when was the last time any of you picked up an Action Comic? You know, so it's Superman stories, and at the end, there were 8 pages of Jimmy Olsen. And they compiled these, and like eventually somebody cracked the back of the book, and they were like, wow, these Jimmy Olsen comics are like the best comics of the year. I don't know why no one's reading these. Well, it's because they're in Action Comics. Anyway, so, but they compiled them into a one shot. And I picked it up, and it's absolutely great. And they were like, oh, this guy can write. Let's give him Supergirl. And no one was reading Supergirl. And he's like, well, I got some ideas. And they're like, we don't like him. And he's like, all right, I'm leaving. And he left and went to Marvel. And now they're putting him on like a whole bunch of the Ultimate books and stuff like that.
Oh, so, wow. So DC fucked
DC
up.
DC best. And then they rebooted. And Nick Spencer's the type of guy that you build a reboot around. Like he's just, like a young Alan Moore. He's great. Great guy.
Oh, that would have been really cool then to have him with the reboot.
Does he have the same writing sense as Alan Moore? Like that's what he wants to do with the characters?
Well, I think the thing is, if you've ever read any of Alan Moore's America's Best stuff, like Tom Strong and all that, he had that sensibility where there was a little bit of like tongue-in-cheek, but it was really just appreciative of the characters rather than like cynical about them.
Yeah.
So they didn't like that because nobody takes Supergirl seriously. So he was like, all right, then I'm going to tell good stories with Supergirl in them and I'll change stuff and make it interesting.
Yeah.
But DC was too sort of sticking the mud about it and they didn't like the idea of...
they just wanted the character.
Changing everything.
They wanted it to stay the same. They wanted it to be this bleak, dreary, violent thing that nobody reads. So like,
I think the reboot's a really good idea. I think it's going to be amazing to have. I think that's what you need to revitalize.
I think it comes down to the quality of the writing though.
Yeah, well, that's exactly it. There's definitely going to be people who aren't in it. I'm thinking of people like my dad who, you know, read comics when they started out. And, you know, I know people like that are just going to complain out of their ass and say, there's a reason why this comic's around so much. Why reboot them? Mm-hmm. But then there's the other generation that will look at it and be like, like people like you who literally started reading comics this year, who's going
to
be like,
would love to be at the beginning.
I want to start, where it's, because I remember in early 2000, the DC changed around a lot of the characters to make it more modern, or just all comic books. Nick Fury was made black. Wonder Woman was made a lesbian. You know, like Blue Beetle, I think, was either made black or gay. But you know what I mean? They did the censor.
They were trying to bring it into like an edgy
contemporary
reality. Yeah,
because when comics started, everyone was white.
Yeah. Well, everybody who was being marketed to for comics. The interesting thing is, like in the 40s, 50s, 60s, you crack a comic book, you look at like the people on the street scenes when monsters are attacking. Everybody is white, Anglo-Saxon, Protestant.
Exactly.
Oh, look at the robot. But the reality was at that time, if you were to actually see snapshots of streets, there were black people and Asian people and people of different body types. They've always existed, but they were never considered part of the audience before. And now that you have writers who are black, gay, you've got people who've got family members with disabilities and things like that, there's a lot more sort of sophisticated, nuanced attitude.
Well, I remember talking to an old teacher in my high school who, you know, loved the original comic books. He's an older guy, and he said he was completely not disgusted, because I'm not saying, you know, he's a racist guy or sexist guy at all, but he was just completely like, this doesn't need to be done. I don't, like, you know, he's like, you know, modern day, we have all of this in our world. Why do you need to put those into comic books? And I was like, well, look at the people who are reading now. Of course you're going to have gay people. You're going to have women. You're going to have black people. You're going to have everyone's reading comics now. If you keep it for only white people, that doesn't make sense anymore.
It's a specific demographic to try to hit. Like,
it doesn't make sense anymore. If you make it only for white people, other people are going to say, okay, the stories are good, but I like this doesn't touch me at all. I can't feel in the characters. And that's why I think it's so brilliant that now, you know, they have a Japanese Spider-Man. They have Indian Spider-Man.
Really?
Spider-Man's completely, you know, covered. Why not make Spider-Man of every different ethnic background? The stories don't change. It's just, you know, they change in a sense that it makes more sense for that culture, but the characters stay the same. The stories stay the same.
Well, it's like everybody should be able to connect with superheroes. That's the point. They're there for the little guy, right? I mean, if you get bullied at school, it doesn't matter what color you are. You need to believe in a superhero a little bit, right? I mean, that's always kind of been the target audience, is this feeling. If you feel marginalized or alienated, well, then why not have, you know, superheroes for people who in real life are being marginalized and alienated? Mm-hmm. That's perfect.
Yeah.
But the other sort of problem, I think, is you've got, on the one hand, you've got comics becoming way more sophisticated than they've ever been. If you crack old books in the 40s and 50s, a lot of them are kind of tough to read because they're so simplistic.
Yeah.
But the hard part of this, especially we're talking about superhero comics, DC and Marvel are owned by Time Warner and Disney now. And the comics, for better or worse, are basically just research and development for the film studios. Mm. That they're seeing what will sell, what people will get angry about, what makes the news, and that's being used as like research fodder for what they're going to do with the next movie or TV show. So it's kind of a shame that now comics are the most sophisticated they've ever been, but
it's
the least sort
research.
Of...
Yeah.
It's sort of heartless.
It's,
at the end of it.
It's
that
not
hurts.
About like selling the comic anymore and making a good story. It's about like finding out what...
But that's more about the producers than the writers, though. So to the writers and artists credit, they're trying to tell stories, but...
And like for me, who started reading comic books before, you know, the movies became popular and the video games became popular, it's such that kind of turning feeling in my stomach that it's like half of it is like, I'm so happy that the public accepts superheroes so well now. They have these, you know, like huge, amazing movies and comic books. But the other half is like, well, now that that's happening, I'm not, you know, comics themselves aren't getting the respect that I expected them to get.
Because it's bled into different mediums now. Comic books are like, I know it's the base and where it all started, but now a lot of people like me, for example, got into comic books through the movies. Mm-hmm. And yeah, and it's taken itself and put itself in another medium completely. And now, like when you watch origin stories, like Wolverine origins, anything that you watch, people remember the movie and not because there's so many different origin stories in the comics that now you have this big Hollywood blockbuster that tells you what happens in the movie.
The way to sort of for comics to serve, because I mean, this might be a bubble. I mean, they don't make Westerns anymore, and Westerns were huge at some point. There's a chance superhero movies might not last much longer. I think the way for comic books, including superhero comic books, to survive is to approach them as like an art form in themselves. Like they need to be about comics. They need to tell stories that you wouldn't be able to tell in the movies. You know, you've got to be able to, and they're still trying to do that. It's really good to see artists going out and trying to tell stories that are a little too challenging in terms of political stuff, in terms of, again, we talk about sexual stuff, race issues.
You're
and
crossing these boundaries that people aren't ready to cross.
And it's not just a question of making the comics bloody, or the Todd McFarlane approach, you make the comics bloodier and add pedophiles. But like, if you actually approach you approach this just as a medium to get a discussion across, not just as like, well, we need to have another wrestling match this week. Mm-hmm. So we're going to put in this character and this character and
like
see them fight for the 13th time.
Like you said, flex competition.
Yeah, it's basically you have which is okay for kids, but right now superhero fans are kind of, they've been asking to be taken seriously, and now we're being taken seriously, so we have to own up to that and tell real stories. Hmm. I think.
Oh, totally. And that's why, like we were saying with graphic novels, I know it's a fancier way to say it, but I'm more of a fan of the graphic novels like the Joker series by the Joker graphic novel by Brian Azzarello. I loved it because it the story is amazing. It was so raw and gritty, but it essentially had this really deep message to it. And that's what I love about it is that you can read all these like Batman issues and maybe 1 in 8 you'll read and be like, oh man, that's important. That's an important message. I want to keep to that. But when you're doing a graphic novel, it's like its own separate universe that you have to hit that message with.
Yeah.
And I think that's why that's why I personally take to them rather than picking up a comic book and starting to read all the issues starting from number one. Mm-hmm. But that's also why I'm interested in DC doing the whole reboot, because now I can be there from the beginning.
Definitely. Well, we're actually just a bit out of time. So if you guys want to plug anything.
Yeah, as always, follow me at Twitter, at IamUmed, IamUmed.
And mine's Nicky Patterson at Twitter. James, you have anything you want to plug?
I've got nothing myself to plug, but, you should keep listening to the show because it's really good.
Aww. Look at that go. Well, thank you for listening.
Thank you.
Can we all
Thanks
end on a laugh?
On, Jordan, Jay, James.
Can we end on a laugh in 3, 2, 1? We have fun.
Yeah.